훨씬 최애타나. 하레 크리스나 하레 크리스나 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 하레 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 람 하레 람 람 람 하레 하레. All glories to all the devotees of the Lord, who we are meant to learn, to love, and serve, and appreciate. And that is the whole purpose of this course, is to develop positive and loving attitude towards the devotees. We want to welcome you all. Larry, wow. Larry Krishna. First time. Carol is back. Yadav Devi is back. Sugar Daddy, Bamboozle, wow. We are honored you're here, Kremlin. Kremlin is steadily here every week. I'm also here. Amazing. Dr. Greg, Hare Krishna, welcome. So, last week, at least part of the class, we were talking about becoming a light to others, becoming a positive influence. I was thinking of a statement that Prabhupada made. He said, "A Brahmin is one who leaves every place cleaner than when he entered." Interesting. So then I thought, well, let's take that idea, and then we can say a devotee really is one who leaves every person who meets him better than when they came. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said a devotee is Chintamani, touchstone. And we know the idea of touchstone. Touchstone is whatever it touches, it turns it, at least. And then let me say it turns it to gold, or we just say it turns it to something more valuable. So he said a devotee is like a touchstone, and that whoever has the association of a devotee, then he's benefited. His heart changes. Even said just by thinking about a devotee would become purified. So if we look at levels of consciousness, I think we were talking about this last time. You look at levels of consciousness. And what would be the higher levels of consciousness? Who could tell me? Like if we made a chart from the lower levels to the higher levels. On the higher levels, I think we discussed last time, the higher levels, there would be compassion, kindness, empathy, like those higher levels. It was because Prabhupada said, he once said that compassion is really the essence of a Vaishnava, the highest quality. So those higher qualities, the affection, the love, the kindness, the tolerance. And then on the lower level, what would be on the lower level? Then the things we're talking about now, like criticism, or as we talked about previously, resentment, anger. Those would be considered very low levels of consciousness. So if one is on a higher level of consciousness, then naturally one brings people who are on a lower level consciousness up just by his or her association. So, as devotees of the Lord, we are meant to cultivate those higher levels and practice living on those higher levels, and thereby bring up other people who associate with us. And so, in Bhaktivinoda's example of us being like touchstone, then in one sense, you can see how you're doing in spiritual life by how people around you are doing. Are they doing well? Are the people that you contact benefiting by your presence, by your association? Are they being elevated? Or are you bringing people down? Because your consciousness is down, you bring everybody down with it. So that's one way of seeing how we are doing as devotees, is how the people around us are doing. And so that's what we ended up talking about last time. And the thought that inspires me the most is that whenever we're Radharadya, welcome. And the thought that inspires me a lot, not the most, is the idea. I completely forgot what I was going to say. What inspires me? What inspires me? Oh yeah, the idea that inspires me is that if we look at any problem or anartha we have in terms of this scale of levels of consciousness, then it becomes clear that to solve an anartha or to overcome an obstacle or a contamination in the heart. We just have to elevate our consciousness above it. So it's kind of like you're going over it because you've elevated your consciousness. So if I'm a very critical person, then I have to elevate my consciousness above criticism to something positive. Because just by telling myself not to criticize is not generally a good solution. But by elevating myself to a higher level of consciousness, which would be, as we discussed, appreciating devotees, that would be a higher level, or serving them. Something positive in relation to the devotees, seeing something good about them, that naturally elevates the consciousness above the level of criticism, which is on a lower level. So instead of just fighting it or saying, okay, I won't criticize, you replace it by something positive. Or there's that saying that the best way to give up a bad habit is to replace it with what? Who can say? What's the best way to overcome a bad habit? You replace it with a? Can someone tell me? Good habit, Bhakti and Carol. Thank you. Yeah, exactly. And that's also the philosophy that Prabhupada has given us in Krishna consciousness. You don't just stop doing something, but you do something positive. And then naturally you'll stop doing something negative by doing something positive. So let's just apply that same principle. If I want to overcome the tendency to be critical of devotees, then I should develop the proper habit or proper way of associating, which would be to appreciate them, to some way honor them, praise them, serve them, to develop that attitude, to develop that habit, and that by developing that habit it becomes more of a natural way of thinking. Otherwise we may naturally be critical, because that's the nature of the conditioned mind, to be critical. So now I want to tell you a story. It's a very nice story. Maybe you've heard this story. There was a millipede. Millipede, how many legs does a millipede have? Who can tell me? Right? Anyone who knows French? How many is a mill? Is a mill 1,000? So does a millipede have 1,000 legs? Does anybody know? Let's say. Dr. Greg says it's 1,000. So whatever Bhakti Greg says, we must accept. So somehow, we'll, for the sake of this story, we'll accept that a millipede has 1,000 legs. And this millipede was the best dancer in the forest. But there was a toad. And the toad was jealous of the millipede. And the toad decided he had to do something. So this millipede could no longer dance. It was bothering the toad that he was such a good dancer. I don't know why the toad was bothered, but he was. So the toad wrote the millipede a letter. And in this letter, his plan was to psych out the millipede. And this is how he wrote his letter. He said, "My dear millipede, indeed you are one of the greatest dancers I've ever seen. And I would like to learn to dance with you. I'm trying to understand your dancing. So is it that you take your 22nd leg and you put it over your 156th leg, and then you put that on top of your 200th leg, and then you cross that with your 999th leg, and then you twist that around on your 4th leg?" And so he's asking the millipede how he does it all. So now the millipede, he's thinking, how do I do that? Is it my 22nd leg over my 156th, over my 200th, over my... And he gets totally mental, and he's like, he's trying to figure out how he does it, and he's getting all confused at which leg is which. So that story illustrates, or is meant to illustrate, I don't know if it illustrates well, but the point is that if you're trying to avoid doing something and you focus on what you don't want to do, what happens? Who can tell me? Instead of focusing on what you should be doing, you focus on what you shouldn't be doing. Then what happens? Who knows? Don't do this. Don't think of that. Don't. And what do you start doing? Anybody out there can tell me? when you focus on what not to do. You know that saying, you end up doing what you don't want to do, yeah. Mitra, thank you, yeah. You know, there's a saying, whatever you resist persists. So, if we think, well, I won't criticize, I shouldn't criticize devotees, I won't, I'll try to stop criticizing devotees. You know, that's good in a sense, but it may not be the solution because you may become so wrapped up in the thought of not criticizing that it doesn't really help you overcome the desire to criticize. But taking the other route, as we're discussing, where do I want to be? Where do I want to go? Then the focus is on where I want to be, not where I don't want to be. That's the whole idea. You focus on where you want to go. What kind of devotee do I want to be like? So if I want to overcome criticism, then I focus on what kind of devotee would not be critical? Well, a devotee who is appreciative, he has a lot of gratitude for the association of others. He's humble, he likes to offer service, he likes to be kind to devotees, generous. So you meditate, you get a vision of this is the kind of devotee I would like to be like, because this is the kind of devotee that would not end up being critical. And so you have this vision, you know, of the kind of devotee you want to be. A lot of times we have the vision of the kind of devotee we don't want to be, but that may not be good. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do. I keep moving around this seat because it's so small. I can't get comfortable. So excuse me. So we, you know what I'm saying? That sometimes we're a little bit afraid of the negative side. Well, I don't want to think this way, or I don't want to. I'm really afraid I might do this. Sometimes we say I can't trust myself. Maybe. So we're focused on negative things. I really don't want to do this. I'm afraid I'll do this. I'm trying to stop doing this. If you've ever thought that way, it's not good. But rather, get a clear picture of what you want to be, how you want to act, and the devotee or devotees who have those qualities and inspire you. That may be devotees. Spiritual sky is back in an action. Hare Krishna. So that may be devotees in the Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, maybe devotees you know. But you look in the Chaitanya Charitamrita or Bhagavatam, there's so many devotees that have so many good qualities. So if you would like to develop those qualities, you can meditate on those devotees. And by meditating on their qualities, you start to imbibe them. And Prabhupada, he often said, okay, Mahatma means great soul. But how do you become great? He said, you become great by serving those who are great. In the same way, you become great by meditating on those who are great. You imbibe that nature. And you become evil by meditating on serving evil persons. And so in a sense, we become evil in a sense by meditating on the things we don't want to do, because the things we don't want to do are lower levels of consciousness, or they are the evil things. So how I want to be, and what devotee is like that, and how can I imbibe those qualities, and how can I be more like them by meditating on them and thinking about them. So then you look in the Bhagavatam, you have these examples of devotees who were offended, but they didn't take offense, they didn't retaliate. Such good examples. And so that you might say, well, you know, these Jagadish, Hare Krishna, you might say, well, you know, these examples in the Shastra, they're so high. And I mentioned this before, that sometimes the examples are so high that you look at what they're doing and you think, that I can't even do that. And so you kind of, you don't know how to relate to it. And the way to relate to it is relate to the principle. What's the principle? Like, for example, we've told the story, Thakur Haridas. He's being beaten to death and he's praying for the people who are beating him. What's the principle? So you're thinking, well, if somebody was beating me to death, I would be so angry, I would just jump on them if I could, if I had a chance, you know, I would do whatever I could to get back at them. So what's the principle? You say, well, you know, I'm not Thakur Haridas. But Thakur Haridas was praying for these people. So the principle is, it's probably unlikely anyone's going to try to kill you or beat you to death, but people will try to, not try, but people will harm you with their words. That's more likely what's going to happen, or harm you by their behavior, which is not directly violent, but it may have a negative effect on you or a violent effect on you. So what's the example? The example here would be, Thakur Haridas is praying, why can't I pray for my enemy? Why can't I pray for someone I don't like? Can I only pray for people I like? No, I can pray for people I don't like. So we get the example. So then I can meditate in Haridasa Thakur and say, yes, I want to develop this quality of being able to be positive towards people who are negative towards me. So I get inspiration by that meditation. So it's more powerful than just thinking, I don't want to be mad when people are mad at me. Yeah, Bhakti and Carol, yeah. She was in that situation. She says that someone actually tried to beat me to death. Yeah, that's unfortunate. And it's, of course, it's not a common thing, and we pray that never would happen again. And yes, Mitra quotes the Bhaktisiddhanta, who said, let me not wish anything but the highest good for my greatest enemy. So, you know, and we have these examples in scripture, so we can get that inspiration. For a conditioned soul to be a well-wisher of his enemy, it's like, you know, it's not the right fit, because naturally we get hurt all the time. And the closer we are to people, the more we get hurt. And we had, you know, our whole session on forgiveness. And the more affection there is, the more you expect a person to be affectionate to you. And when they're not, then we become hurt. So we can become greatly hurt by people who are close to us. So here Bhaktisiddhanta is giving this formula, which seems counterintuitive. It seems, you know, so much against our nature, because when someone treats us in the opposite way in which we expected, then we just become upset and we hold on to it. So now we have to meditate on persons like Vasudeva Dutta. He went to Lord Chaitanya and said, I will take the sinful reactions of all the conditioned souls and I'll suffer them. We get some inspiration. You know, what does that mean for us? I don't think that way, but what does it mean for us? It means that at least I should be willing to tolerate some personal inconvenience. And I should be willing to just be tolerant of people who don't like me, who don't speak well, or are critical of me, and still be able in some way to be their well-wisher. So if we look at the Bhagavatam, we can always find somebody with a quality that we would like to develop, a quality we're lacking that we would like to develop. And so if you look at the different qualities of the devotees, Ambarish Maharaj and his tolerance of the offense of Durvasa, his humility, and that he did not even take offense. Very, very great inspiration can come from that. Nityananda and his tolerance of the offenses of Jagai and Madhai, his compassion. Vasudeva Dutta, his compassion, to want to take the suffering of others. There's always somebody who's doing something which we need to be doing that we're not doing, who could inspire us. And so when we take that inspiration, then we are on the path of elevating our consciousness, or at least we have the vision that that's where we want to be, rather than on the bottom level of just, you know, how sometimes we just kind of live on the bottom level where we're just like angry, we're mad, we're upset, and it goes on day after day, and we see that person who upset us, and we become more upset when we see them. So we're living on this very low level of consciousness, and obviously no pure devotee lives on that level. So we take inspiration from the pure devotees, we meditate on their qualities, we meditate on their activities to elevate our consciousness so we can live on another level. And when we live on that higher level, then the resentment, the anger, the revenge and all that, the tendency to offend, it doesn't exist up here. It only exists down here. And so that's the power of Krishna consciousness. And that's why Prabhupada said, when you're Krishna conscious, you have all good qualities. Because you're existing, at least your desire is to practice living like a pure devotee. So at least you're making the attempt to have the attitudes of it and the behavior of a pure devotee as far as possible in practice, in sadhana, in bhakti sadhana. We're practicing that. And so that's why when I encourage you to serve someone who's hurt you, although it's difficult, it's what a pure devotee would do. I mean, it's easy to serve someone you like. Try serving someone you don't like. Try serving someone who said something that upset you or did something to upset you, that's much more difficult. But that's what a great devotee would do. And that transforms the heart, it transforms the consciousness, and it brings us to a level where we will less and less feel the need to be critical of other devotees. So I think, you know, there's one way to look at this. If somebody hurts you, you can think, well, this is good because now I have the chance to be the well-wisher of my so-called enemy, my worst enemy. You are my enemy, and I have a chance to be your well-wisher. Spiritual sky wants to meditate on my qualities. That could be dangerous. It might take you down to some lower region. Oh, Krishna. Of course, if you see any good quality in me, then it is only Prabhupada's mercy on me. Of course, I don't think I really have any good qualities. But if you somehow see them, either you're illusioned, or if you think they're real, then it's Prabhupada's, by his grace, that I exhibit any good qualities. It's simply, of course, we can all exhibit good qualities. It's all the grace of the Lord that any good quality will develop in us. But I think it's an important point what Spiritual Sky says, can I meditate on you? Because a lot of times, when we see the good qualities in our peers, then it gives us confidence. Well, if he can do it, I can do it. And, you know, you see the good qualities of the pure devotees, and you try to understand the principle, and you understand, okay, these are pure devotees, this is how they act, but what about me? Will I ever be able to act that way? And so when you see another devotee who's more or less in the same situation as you are, acting in a way in which you would like to act, it's very inspirational because it gives you that faith. Well, he was also a conditioned soul. He's come from a similar background, and he's doing this. I can do it. So, yeah, I think we definitely can get great inspiration from all the devotees, even younger devotees. When we see the good qualities of someone younger than us, we should be inspired. There's no question. So, now, where do we go from here? Well, as I was saying before, we want to be an inspiration for others, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that's what a Vaishnava is. He's the touchstone. And we can't be an inspiration for others unless we set some example, which is inspirational. And I have found in my attempts at becoming Krishna conscious that if I'm in a situation where I need to set an example for others, it helps me tremendously develop my Krishna consciousness, develop the qualities I want to develop, and develop the attitudes. Because I feel even more obliged to do it, because I feel a connection there in helping others by my example. So if you're ever in a situation, or can put yourself in a situation where you become some kind of role model, and people, you're meant to be an example, you're meant to be someone who can inspire another, or others, or many others, that's very good for you, because that will help you help you be more conscious of how you're acting, and it will help you be more conscious of acting properly. So, in meditating on the whole subject of offending devotees, I look at it in a similar way than I look at sexual desire, although you might say, well, where's the correlation in Scripture? Well, you know, I think in Scripture there's basically an indirect correlation between sex desire and everything material, every form of material consciousness. Because Prabhupada said that is, you know, the root or the basis. But I was thinking it more in terms of sexual desire, psychologically and philosophically and physiologically, is kind of built into the machine, the body. It's just a natural, inherent desire, as is eating or sleeping. And so, you know, when you're off guard, if you're trying to be sexually pure and you're off guard, it's very, very easy to be dissuaded, attracted, pulled, and so forth. So you always have to be on guard. At least that's my experience. Particularly if you want to practice celibacy, you just always have to be on guard. You always have to be protecting yourself because the desire is so strong. sexual urges and sexual attractions are so strong that you always have to be monitoring yourself and making sure you're in the right situation and your heart is pure and so forth. And I was thinking that being envious of another person and offending or criticizing another person, and of course here we're talking about devotees, is very similar, because the tendency is so strong in the heart of a conditioned person to be critical, to put another down, to put ourselves up, because pride, you know, is one of the root contaminations of material life, and so pride is what causes criticism. So just as sex desire is so strong, the tendency to criticize is almost, in a sense, natural. Not in a sense, it is natural for the conditioned soul. It just happens. It just, you know, we see it everywhere around. Everybody is blaming everybody else. That's just how it goes. You know, what goes on in the movies? Someone was wrong, now he's taking revenge, right? Isn't it? They get wronged. The first 20 minutes of the movie, somebody did something to them, and now they're going to take revenge for the rest of the movie. It's just, that's conditioned life. That's a conditioned soul. It's not my fault. I blame others. I take revenge. No, look what's going on. Look at the newspaper, the media, the talk shows. It's just everyone is criticizing everybody. It's just, that is the nature of conditioned souls. Even amongst devotees, so much criticism goes on. This devotee did this, that's not right, Prabhupada wouldn't like that. It's so difficult not to criticize unless we are consciously attempting to develop a different attitude. Now, you know, one thing is to point out defects, that's another thing, but the nature to just lash out is, it's not something that Prabhupada taught us to do by any means. I wanted to read something to you, because I printed out some things that Prabhupada said in his letters or conversations, and let me give you the context of it. In the beginning of the movement, there's so many problems that would come up in devotees interacting with one another. And many, many of those problems went to Prabhupada, and he had to address in letters, mostly in letters. The devotee's just not getting along. And I just printed some out. I had a lot of letters that I put together that I found when Prabhupada was talking about this. So I put them together. So I thought it'd be interesting to read, just to see what was going on when Prabhupada was here, what he was dealing with, and how he instructed devotees to deal with this tension, you know, because I'm making the point that we have a tendency to be very critical, or can be very critical. And Prabhupada, you know, basically tried to steer us away from that as best he could. So let's read a few. If you have any questions, just ask them. Okay. So this is a letter written in 1974. Some difficulty, I don't know what it is. One of the problems with the letters, you don't know the context, the complete context, because you're just getting an answer and you don't know what was going on, what situation was presented to Prabhupada. But of course, you could get some idea by reading the answer. The main difficulty there seems to be lack of full cooperation. So obviously, devotees aren't getting along. I have written to you to become responsible and to manage things. However, at the Bhaktivedanta Manor, as anywhere, the local president is in charge. So there must be a problem with the authority of the president, people not wanting to accept it. And then Prabhupada makes a very interesting statement. So everyone wake up if you're not awake and you're not paying full attention. If you're doing something else, doodling around. This is the punchline right here. The reason why there is difficulty and competitive spirit is that everyone wants to be supreme. That is the difficulty. So that's what you might call a sutra. A few words hitting the point, right to the point, and I'll read that again. The reason why there is difficulty and competitive spirit is that everyone wants to be supreme. That is a difficulty. Of course, as we've as we've mentioned before, if you criticize someone, it makes you look better, apparently. Of course, in the Vaishnava world, when you know the truth is, when you criticize, it doesn't make you look good, because everybody looks at you and thinks, why are you criticizing? Devotees don't criticize. So, you know, you like to put someone down because it makes you bigger if you put someone down lower. But really, other devotees will look at that and say, well, you know, what kind of devotee is this criticizing? Anyway, Prabhupada points out here that we want to be God. Makes us look more like God if we put other people down. And what does God mean? We want to control. I mean, the point is, Prabhupada's making the point here is apparently there was issues of control. So he's saying the problem is you want to control. So control, pride, lack of cooperation, criticism. It's all like, you know, they're all in bed together. Okay. Now, Prabhupada, in another letter, makes a point. It kind of sets off the alarm, the red flag, he says. We got some indication that from so-and-so Prabhu, that there was some misunderstanding and things were not going well between both you big leaders. And that is why I was a little concerned, because such things should never be allowed to fructify in our society. That will spoil everything. And this saying, that will spoil everything, Prabhupada said quite often. You know, not being able to work out differences, being highly critical, not cooperating, being down one another's throats, creates dissension. And so Prabhupada, when he saw dissension, he would always say, this is what can ruin us, dissension. You know, not being able to see, to make some form of compromise, to see another person's point of view, to be able to work things out. Prabhupada was very concerned about this. And you can look at it and say, okay, well, on the practical level, he's concerned because it can create a division in our society, parties. Arguing with one another, then it'll create factions. People will side with different factions. And there could be a split. And he mentioned that many times, that factions and splits could be there. I mean, that's what happened in his spiritual master's movement, Gaudiya Mathas. But also you can see another thing is that the mentality that's creating this, that was also a concern for Prabhupada, that it's not just what was happening on the external level, the friction that we were seeing on the surface, but Prabhupada could understand what the mentality was that would be creating it. So there was also a big concern that if we have that if we maintain the mentality that creates these factions, or creates this dissidence, creates this inability to cooperate well, that very mentality, in a sense, will destroy us. So like both things are there. The external effects will destroy us, and the internal consciousness that causes the external behavior could possibly destroy us. So now we have a comment. Jagadish says, I was once told that when we chant japa, we do not use our index finger, because that is the finger we have used in the past to point at others with. I never heard that, but can't confirm or deny that. But you know the saying, if you point your finger at one, you point one finger, then there's three pointing at you. So we've talked a lot about that. Index finger represents the ego, yeah. So the way this material consciousness works, it's all caught up with the ego, the body, the pride, the I'm right, I'm better, I need to be right, and all of this. So the most amazing thing that I have found, and it's such an important point, is that one can practice Krishna consciousness for many years and still be proud, still be very critical, still be very caught up with false ego, looking for acknowledgement, appreciation from others, and still be very, very narrow in terms of what they believe to be correct, and not be open with others to discuss other points of view, or to be just a more cooperative person. And that is important to acknowledge, that even though one is executing the process of bhakti, still, you know, like Bhakti Siddhanta gives the example that the boat is being rowed but all night, but they never lifted up the anchor. So we're executing bhakti, but we may be attached. I mean, you know, as stupid as it sounds, we may be attached to criticizing. We may get some kind of perverted, I don't want to say pleasure, but a perverted boost to our ego by criticizing. And it kind of keeps us sane or stable, because it keeps our ego staying stable or sane. And so in the process of bhakti, we have to be able to let things go. We have to see the contamination, just go, okay, I've got to let this drop. And a lot of times we don't. And even though we're chanting for year after year and doing bhakti, we hold on to certain attachments. That's why one of the ten offenses to maintain material attachment, because it's so common. So what are these attachments? And not just gross attachments, it's attachments to pride. As I said, it could be attachment to being critical, to being right. So, you know, it's all wound up in identifying with the body and everything that goes along with identifying with the body. And so all this stuff adds to that critical mentality. And so it's like this whole complex web. So if we go back to my original point, that the solution is to get inspiration from great devotees and try to emulate their behavior. And sometimes, we've talked about this before, Prabhupada said, if you emulate the behavior of exalted people, then that will cause you to what? It cause you to then want to act in that way. Even if it's just imitating it. So by doing it, by imitation, if it's the right thing, he said, imitation of a good thing is good. So you might say, well, we want to be genuine, we don't want to imitate, but we're using the word imitate to make the point that if you don't feel like doing something or you don't have realization to act on that level, but you still act that way. We don't say imitating, we'll say you're following in the footsteps of great devotees by acting in a particular way. He said that develops the desire. That's why it's so important and to act in a proper way, because it develops the desire, which develops the habit, which develops the attitude. Weeks ago, or maybe months ago, I was talking about samskaras, and samskaras are impressions. So this is very relevant to this subject. Samskara is an impression on the heart. And so when we do something, it creates an impression. When we see something, it creates an impression. When we hear something, it creates an impression. And we're all aware of that, more or less, but perhaps not aware of it on the most subtle level. So let's say, because we're talking about criticism, we use the example of criticism. Every time we criticize somebody, it creates an impression on our heart. And what kind of impression does it create? It creates the impression that, the best way to say it is it creates some kind of impression of pleasure that this was enjoyable, criticizing them. And it furthers the critical attitude and it furthers the desire to criticize. And you can apply that to anything. I just did a course on sexual purity. It was for men, but the idea was that the more you are pure within your heart by controlling your mind, controlling your eyes, controlling how you approach and how you relate to women, always seeing women in the most respectful way, not in a way of seeing them as objects of your enjoyment. If you're very careful to develop proper respectful behavior towards women, proper respectful attitudes, honoring them, respecting them, never thinking that in any way you have a right to enjoy another woman other than your wife, and even to respect your wife in the highest way, that's a kind of samskara, because that's how you're seeing. And we weren't raised with those samskaras. Men were not raised with those samskaras. Men were raised to see women as objects of enjoyment. So those are the samskaras we have. So the more a man sees a woman as an object of enjoyment, the more he sees her as an object, the more the desire to enjoy that woman in that way is increased. It's just a habitual way of thinking. So that way of thinking reinforces the samskara. So conversely, if a man sees a woman respectfully, that creates another samskara, and then that becomes an habitual way of dealing with women. So in the same way, if we're critical of devotees, it's creating a samskara. And that's just, you know, naturally to be critical and then be critical more, and then it's just this domino reaction. So you can create positive samskaras. As soon as you say something positive about a devotee, as soon as you appreciate a devotee, you're developing a habit in your mind to see the good and appreciate. So you're developing samskara, an impression on your heart. And samskaras also, you can see them as causing us to have certain tendencies. So now we're developing the tendency to appreciate, or to want to appreciate, or to want to see what's good, developing that attitude. And as we said last week, if you develop that attitude, then naturally when you're in the association of other devotees, you'll be seeing the good and you'll be appreciating it, and you'll tell them that. So Prabhu, I really appreciated that kirtan. I really appreciated the class, or I'm seeing how nicely you're sweeping the temple. You'll start to notice things to appreciate that you didn't even notice before, because if your tendency is to be critical, why would you notice the good things? So if you alter yourself, create positive samskaras, it's really wonderful, because you'll start to notice good things about devotees you didn't notice before. And you become more grateful for devotees' association. And then when you're in that consciousness, you're going to be much more inspired in devotional service. So it's an interesting psychology. It's kind of like, you know, maybe you took somebody for granted, but now because your attitude's positive, you're appreciating them in ways you didn't appreciate them before. But that really helps you when you appreciate another devotee. It's a very, very positive influence on your heart and your consciousness. It's very inspiring. Because by appreciating another devotee, you're allowing them to inspire you in bhakti. And when you criticize them, you don't get inspired. You get discouraged. I mean, if you're just like, after this class, go, you know, spend the next hour criticizing devotees. Just, you know, pick out 10 devotees and, you know, just find all the faults you possibly can about them, and then give me a call and tell me how you feel. And you'll be calling me crying. You go, oh, I feel so terrible, I want to kill myself. Isn't it? I mean, you could imagine. How would you feel? I mean, unless you're totally down in the mode of ignorance and you're getting this ultimate high from criticizing all these people. But if you have any sanity, then certainly Manjesh made it. Wow. So if you had any sanity, certainly you would feel miserable. Now, conversely, if you took 10 devotees and just appreciated something good about each one of them, you'd be very inspired, wouldn't you? Because now you're seeing 10 different good qualities in 10 different people. So it's an interesting thing to meditate on, that the more we are critical, then the more negative we become, the more we become drained of energy and enthusiasm, generally. Of course, some people get energy from criticizing. That's like, you know, if they can't criticize, there's like no reason to get up. Oh, man. I hate to be in their shoes, but it's true, isn't it? Some people, it's like they live to criticize. It's like that's their raison d'être. If I can just criticize, you know, I can get through the day. Oh, Krishna, save those poor souls. But, you know, if you go through the day and you're just appreciating the good qualities of people, even non-devotees, sometimes I'll see non-devotees. And, you know, of course, there's the verse, you know, if you're not a devotee, you don't have any good qualities, and if you're a devotee, you have all good qualities. And then devotees walk around and they'll see some devotee do something and they'll think, how could that devotee do that? That was so bad or so rude or so this or so that. And then they'll be working, or they'll have contact with someone who's not a devotee, at least not a devotee of Krishna, And they will be quite the opposite of that other devotee. And it seems like this person has a lot of good qualities and another devotee doesn't. What does it all mean? You know, I was told the devotee has all good qualities. So I should arbitrarily think that no non-devotee has any good qualities. So you could say, from the absolute platform, any good quality is not good unless it's engaged in Krishna service. So we can say, no, they don't have any good qualities because if their life is dedicated to material enjoyment, then whatever good qualities they have is wasted or employed in their pursuit of material life. So it's not a good quality. But isolating the good quality in and of itself, let's say the person's very kind or understanding or compassionate or whatever, these are certainly qualities of sattva-gun. They may not be connected directly to Krishna, but still, we can allow ourselves to be inspired by them. As Chanaka said, take gold from a filthy place. So we see, oh, this person, they really have this quality of being able to listen, and I'm not a good listener, and I get inspired by them because they're such good listeners. So we can get inspiration anywhere, but my point is, when we see the good, it becomes inspirational. Okay, now, Bruce has a question, which I will read. I often feel a conflict between the inner self and the outer self. When speaking with someone, I may feel feelings of distaste or dislike, but I do not express this with the outer self. How to resolve this conflict? Very good question. Well, perhaps it's one way of looking at it is that it's not a conflict. Because it may not be necessary for you to express it, or it may not be appropriate or beneficial. Sometimes it may be. Let's first take the case in which it's not appropriate. There is no reason to express it. No benefit for you or for them. So then I wouldn't call that a conflict. I would say that you're just being self-controlled and you're not going to say something that's going to hurt somebody unnecessarily. I would see it more being a conflict when you need to express to them how you feel. And that is difficult because even with your best intentions, you may offend them. But I would say that Larry Krishna has the simple solution to solve all problems. Chant and be happy. You got to chant really well to solve this problem. Okay, so let's go back to the problem. Yes, we can't deny that chanting is the solution, but we're also chanting and still we have the problem. So I think what Bruce is saying is how to express what you feel about someone when you want them to know how you feel when they've upset you or disturbed you. And you don't want to be offensive. I think that's the question. Is that right, Bruce? You have some ill feeling, you want to express it, but you don't want to be offensive. And so, in order not to be offensive, you're just being nice. And you're not really being straightforward because you're just making them feel like everything is okay when it's not okay. Of course, if you're okay with the fact that it's not okay and you don't have to tell them it's not okay, then that's fine also. But if you're not okay with that or the situation is such that you need to tell them, then we can deal with that. So I think that's your question. Yes. Okay. I think we lost Bruce on the chat, so he can't answer that. But I'm making that assumption that's the question. So, how do you tell somebody something they don't want to hear and not offend them? Okay, that's a good question. Sometimes it is said that if you need to tell somebody something that you're concerned they may not, it may be difficult for them to accept, you first want to approach them in a positive way and express how you appreciate them or appreciate certain things that they do. Or if you have a close relationship, then appreciate the relationship. And then you can also express that there's something you need to tell them and that you're concerned they might be upset and your intentions And not to upset them, not to be critical, but just to express your feelings, and you hope they will be understanding, and if there's anything that you said that they're upset with, please forgive you for that, and like that, and then express it, and hopefully that will work. I mean, you know, we just want to be humble. That's the main idea. We don't want to express ourselves in a critical way. We want to come from we want to let them know we're not being critical. We're just, this is a concern I have, or this is how I felt when this happened, and I'm just being honest. And please don't take offense. I just want to let you know and see if we can resolve it. I want, you know, make it better. So Greg says, I took it to mean that Bruce was dealing with a feeling of hypocrisy by keeping inner feelings from spilling over to the outer self. In other words, this is how I feel, so I should express it. Is that what you're saying? And I'm a hypocrite if I don't. I understand what you're saying, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're a hypocrite, because expressing those feelings could be detrimental in the long run to you and the person. And if you ascertain that's the case, then you may just control yourself and feel that it's better I don't express it, because it won't be beneficial. They won't be able to hear it. They won't understand. It'll make things worse. And then I just have to, you know, adjust my relationship with that person accordingly. So Bruce says, sometimes I may be in a social situation, cannot be honest about something that is said, and thus conflict arises. Does one just keep on smiling and feel the conflict? Yeah. Again, it depends on the relationships you have with people, and, you know, in certain situations, I mean, you know, we're in the material world in very awkward situations. Some situations there will be conflict. You can't say anything. It'll be, it's unfortunate, or, you know, if the conflict's so bad, you may want to avoid those social situations in the future if you can't deal with them. And being honest, you know, that's also an art. Yeah, so Bhakti Greg is, so I think I'm addressing the issue. And I think it's a personal issue, how much of a problem it is for you with a particular individual, and how much you want to express how you feel, and how important it is for you to express that. And if it's so important, then you'll be willing to accept the consequences that, you know, the person you express it to may blow up. And then you said, but it was more important for me to express it and then worry about the relationship. So, but, you know, another point I'm making is that because practicing devotional service in the material world, it already puts us in an awkward situation. So we might run into more awkward situations than the average person, just because of who we are, what we believe. And it may be that we just have to learn how to deal with that internally and just kind of go along with it, and, you know, internally maintain our principles and go along with it to create peace. I mean, the way I personally look at it is, what's going to create more turmoil? Me being so-called hypocrite, or me being straightforward with people and honest? If that creates more disturbance, then that disturbance is going to be more disturbing than the hypocrisy that I was having to deal with. That's personally how I look with it. It's just a very pragmatic view on it. And I think sometimes that's how Prabhupada dealt with things. He would just analyze, well, what's really better for bhakti in this situation? Is it better I disturb a situation? Or is it better I just remain silent and don't say anything to disturb anybody and tolerate it? Or is there some, you know, third way where I can express this to people? You know, like a lot of times it's said that you don't want to express it while it's happening. Maybe something's going on, you're in a social situation and it's driving you crazy. Then it's sometimes better to express it the next day. You know, say, yesterday when this was happening, I just want to tell you, you know, I don't drink, or I don't eat meat, or I don't, you know, I'm actually practicing these principles, so I don't, you know, I don't get into dirty jokes and stuff. So I just, you know, just want you to let you know that. And so the emotion is not intense because it's after the fact. So I think there, I think there's many ways of looking at this, according to the situation, according to who you are. And, you know, of course, you don't want to compromise your spiritual principles. But you know, you have the story of Sanatana Goswami, and, you know, the story, he was traveling, he had 7 gold coins, and a thief came. So, anyway, it's a long story, but Sanatana then, he decided, you know, we won't travel with any gold coins, because we won't travel with any money, because then these thieves will come and try to steal it or kill us. So it was kind of like, you know, diplomacy. Or Sanatana was in jail and he made friends with the jail keeper, and eventually the jail keeper let him go. So he was doing diplomacy. You know, he wasn't expressing that actually, I don't want to be in jail. I don't deserve to be in jail. And this whole government, this Muslim government, I don't like it. He wasn't expressing that. Because his mission was to get out of jail and be with Mahaprabhu. So he was just diplomatic and very nice. And it served his purpose. So sometimes that's there also. You know, you're looking at it in a very pragmatic way. What's going to be the best for bhakti in the long run? Okay. Mitra says sometimes it's best not to say anything. That may be. I heard a prophet said to know what to say and know what not to say. That's also an art. Kremlin says sometimes people don't want to improve their situation. Yeah. So there's so many individual situations. Radharaja says sometimes it seems like the more familiar you become with the devotee, the more there is a chance to see others' faults due to being with them more. At the same time, we're supposed to have deep friendships with the devotees. I guess familiarity can breed contempt if you're not careful. Okay, let me read something. Do we have time? Well, time's almost up. I want to read something to you. The Prabhupada answered this question. Just give me a minute to find it. If I can find it at all. Well, here's one. I don't know if this is the one I was looking for, but I think it addresses your question a little bit. We should not criticize each other. Yeah, this is what I was looking for. We should not criticize each other. As Vaishnavas, because there is fault in everyone, and we may be ourselves subject to criticism. So the first point Prabhupada's making is, okay, I'm with devotees, I see faults. So Prabhupada's, he's kind of saying, well, everybody has faults, so you're going to see them. So the issue is not that you see the fault. And I think that's the point you're making, Radharaja, that we see faults, and then that's a problem. So Prabhupada's saying, well, it's not really a problem that you see faults. In other words, like you're saying, I'm saying, well, just see the good, and you're saying, well, sometimes you can't see the good because there are faults, and you see them. They do something wrong. You know, we know this is a principle, and they're doing it the wrong way, or they're not doing it at all, or they're breaking it, and you see it. Okay. We should not criticize each other as Vaishnavas because there is fault in everyone, and we may be ourselves subject to criticism. So then that's Prabhupada's next point. Okay, everyone has faults, including myself. So we're going to see others' faults, but I may be subject to criticism also. So like Jesus said, judge not lest you be judged. You know, if you're willing to judge others, then you have to be willing to allow them to judge you. So Prabhupada's making the point, if you're above suspicion, okay, if you're above fault, then you can find those faults. But if you're not, then why, you know, what's the point? You have so many faults, why are you faulting others? It doesn't make sense. It's like you're broke and you're pointing out all these other people who are broke. Hey, look at him, he's broke, he has no money. But either do you. So, you know, how can you say anything? If you're a millionaire, you can say, oh, look at this guy, he's broke, he doesn't know how to make money. All right, you can say that. What else does Prabhupada say? Yeah, we're all in the material world. None of us has a great past. Spots on the moon, yeah. So this is a really good point. I'm glad you brought this up, Radha. This is just a wonderful point that we're around devotees, we see the fault, and Prabhupada's saying, yes, you will, because they have them. really the point here, the way I see it, is not that you won't see the fault, but it's how you're affected by the fault. Isn't that really the issue here? Because we're going to see faults. But how are you seeing them? How are you processing them? Are you still able to appreciate a devotee who has faults? No, I can't appreciate you because you have faults. Because I saw you did this or that. I can't appreciate you. So it really boils down to the fact that, okay, I see the fault, but can I appreciate the devotee despite the fault? Or as Bhaktisiddhanta said, don't allow others' faults to harm you. As Booker T. Washington said something like, I will never allow any man to degrade me to the point of me hating him. In other words, I'll never allow another person to do something that would cause my own degradation, which would be caused by hating them. So Bhaktisiddhanta says, don't allow others' faults to harm you. Nobody can harm you unless you allow them. So, okay, you see the fault. I see the fault. Bhakti and Carol sees the fault. Manjesh sees the fault. Kremlin sees the fault. And Kremlin's like, oh, whatever. You know, he's a nice person. He has faults. And then you might go, oh, this is a fault. It's driving me crazy. He's not supposed to be this way. So I think that's the point. That's the point Prabhupada's saying. Let's go on. Prima Sindhu is asking, what about the verse? Yeah, we were talking about that before you came, I think. But I can address it again. The verse that without bhakti, you don't have any good qualities. So you could look at someone and say, hey, Prabhu, you don't have any bhakti, therefore you don't have any good qualities. Or you could look and say, oh, you have so much bhakti, you have so many good qualities. So none of us has a great past. Okay. Sugar Daddy just lost it. He can't see me. Okay, so let me continue reading this, and then we'll end the class at this point. It's a very good point. Radharaja, you get 5 gold stars for asking that question. I really like that. And also, Bruce, your question as well. I don't know if I completely answered your question, or if I didn't, let me know. Or Greg, if you don't think I answered it, let me know. But let's finish this. So we should not criticize each other as Vaishnavas because there is fault in everyone, and we may be ourselves subject to criticism. Who are you to criticize? Are you better? Best thing is to be above suspicion ourselves. Then, if we see discrepancies and make suggestion, the others will automatically respect and take action to rectify the matters. That is cooperation. So, Prabhupada's making the point. You better not point out the mistake unless you are exemplary yourself. And here Prabhupada's talking about a situation in which there's management, there's leadership, and someone has to point out a mistake to keep things in line. But at the same time, it appears that he's saying even you have to do that, you better be above suspicion before you correct anybody. And then Prabhupada says, if you are an example and you point out a fault of another, you want to correct another, and you're the example of behavior you would like him to follow, then Prabhupada's saying they'll have respect for you generally. He said, automatically they'll respect you and they'll rectify it. That is cooperation, and we must exist on such cooperation. Otherwise, the whole thing is doomed if we simply go on fighting over some small thing. Well, that was an answer to familiarity breeds contempt. We're supposed to have deep friendships, but, you know, one of the fundamental elements of any friendship is to be forgiving. I think one of the, it's almost ironic, paradoxical, but when we come to devotional service, we are introduced to kind of a razor's edge of a lifestyle, a razor's edge of way of living that, you know, the path is pretty direct, And there are a lot of ways of thinking and ways of behaving that deviate us from the path. So there's a lot more to be critical of in devotees, because we're really on a narrow path. Whereas when we're not devotees, it's kind of like whatever makes you happy, you do it. So the tendency to, there's less of a tendency. There may be less of a tendency. There's less to be critical of. I mean, another, my point is, we have more to be critical of. You know, you might not like your brother or your sister because when your parents left, they didn't give you equal amounts, equal share of the money or the property or whatever. That might be one thing. But, you know, in the life of a devotee, we're supposed to be doing so many things. So there's so many things, in that sense, faults that we might have if we don't do everything just right. So we kind of open ourselves up to a potential world of severe criticism just because we're expected to be very pure. We're expected to be the white sheet. And Prabhupada said, oh, Brahman, he's a white sheet, does one little thing wrong, it's a spot on the white sheet. Where other people, their sheets are already dirty, so you don't notice the spots. So, Prabhupada disciple once said to me, isn't that the pot calling the kettle black? Yes. You said something critical. Carol, you shouldn't have done that. That wasn't nice. So Bruce is saying there is a lot of conflict between the inner and the outer because it's not always appropriate to express the outer. I mean, you know, look at Prabhupada when he first came. You could say he had conflicts because he couldn't, you know, all these hippies were behaving in strange ways and he couldn't say anything. If he said, they'd all leave. So I think we go back to that point that he was seeing it in a pragmatic way. So there was conflict, but he's looking at, well, what's the best thing? What's the best way to behave that's favorable? So here's the key. Maybe this will help you sort it out. Favorable in Nectar Devotions, I call it Anushilanam. Bhakti should be done favorably. So what would be favorable when this conflict is going on? What's the favorable way to resolve it? Maybe the favorable way to resolve it is go up to that person and tell them, this is how I feel. And let that person blow up and punch you in the face, but you feel relieved because you told them. Or maybe the best thing is not to tell them, because you know if you tell them, they're going to punch you in the face and it's going to make things worse. And therefore, you think the most advantageous thing for your own bhakti is not to say anything and you'll be more peaceful and you can do your bhakti because you don't want to be agitated. So, you know, it's. I think it's really an individual thing of how you, what is the most favorable way to deal with this inner conflict. That's one way of looking at it, unless I'm still missing the question. And if I haven't really addressed it properly, let me know and And we'll take it further. And then, so Prema Sindhu is asking about, what about the verse, Rabba Bhakta Shokuto Mahagunan, that non-devotees don't have any good qualities? Well, you could take that verse also and say, neophyte devotees don't have any good qualities. Because those qualities that are being spoken of in that verse are devotional qualities. They're not qualities of sattva gun. They're transcendental qualities. So anyone who's practicing bhakti in the beginning may only have the seeds of transcendental qualities, so even a new bhakti doesn't have any good qualities. But at the same time, we say we see them as good qualities because they're engaged in devotional service. And we don't see the non-devotees' qualities as good because they're not engaged in devotional service. But although many of them have good qualities in and of themselves, if you put those qualities in a vacuum, they may have some humility, they may have some ability to be grateful, and they may have compassion. Maybe it's misdirected compassion, but they have it. So there's no reason we can't get inspired by that. You know, like Mother Teresa. She had a lot of compassion. So someone may say, well, yeah, but the compassion was only addressed to the body. So that was not true compassion. Of course, you know, she was introducing people to Christ as well. So, but you could say, well, if I could have the kind of compassion she had, or have the willingness to sacrifice my life for others as she did, then I could use that in Christian service. Then you get inspired by that. I mean, why not get inspired? Why, you know, I don't think it's smart to just go, oh, these people don't have any good qualities. Philosophically, we could say that, yeah, because they're engaged in Maya service. They're not engaged in Christian service. So how could anything be good about that? But you could say, oh, so-and-so, he's very smart, he's very sharp, I could learn something from him. So-and-so, he's a very tolerant person, and I could learn from him how to be tolerant. And so-and-so, he's very kind, and I need to be more kind. So you can take inspiration from anywhere, if you can. Maybe you can't. Maybe for some of you, that's like, I couldn't do it. But if you can take the gold from a filthy place, why not? Why not do it? That was my whole point. We get inspiration by seeing the good in others. I know one devotee, he was, this is funny, and I won't mention his name. Maybe you might know. But one of his disciples said that he takes inspiration from Michael Jordan. It's like, well, how could a guru take inspiration from Michael Jordan? I don't know if that means that he watches him play basketball or what. But there was something about Michael Jordan, perhaps maybe something lacking in him or something which he had that he wanted to develop further that Michael Jordan had, that inspired him. So you might say, that person has really fallen to be inspired by Michael Jordan. But he was, so what can you say? You know, so he should have been inspired by Prahlad Maharaj. I'm sure he was inspired by Prahlad Maharaj also. But he was inspired by Michael Jordan somehow or other. Or, you know, you might hear a story of a person who had a very difficult upbringing and became successful, you know, really determined and strong. And you could become inspired by that. I think, yeah. I could take that inspiration and become more successful in what I'm doing. I think I'm limited in so many ways, but that person wasn't restricted by his limitations, so why should I be restricted by mine? And I could use that inspiration in Christian service. So that's possible. So, okay. Gold can be taken from a filthy place, yes. Okay, so we should end here. So your assignment this week, everyone, is to be a touchstone and bring light to everyone. And Bruce, if you want to write me, my address is Mahat, M-A-H-A-T, @AOL.com. We can further resolve it. Or Greg, of course, you know. And starting October 14th, there's going to be an online class in forgiveness. It's going to go for 5 weeks, which I'm going to teach with Archana Siddhi. You are all invited to participate. You can get more information on that on Krishna.com somewhere. Where? Somewhere. Over the... there it is. You will see it. Where is it? On the homepage? On the homepage is a scroll down, and the class is called The Art of Forgiveness. 4,421 people have read that, and if they all sign up, we won't have room for them all. But it's a wonderful class, which is aimed, there they are, yours truly in Archana Siddhi, and you can register right online. It starts October 14th, ends November 19th, and we develop like a 19-step process which you can apply in your life to forgive anyone and anything, and it's very powerful. A lot of the things that I talked about will be put into practices. When they're put into practices, it takes on a new dimension. So, if you're interested, then there's the link there. Check it out. And we'll see you next Tuesday. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Hare Krishna. And be the touchstone this week. Be the light to light others' lives. Jai. Hare Krishna.